ज्ञानतिमरन्दस्य ज्ञानञ्जनाशलाकाय चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः.
Rupa Goswami says that a person who knows the languages of the different countries, especially the Sanskrit language, which is spoken in the cities of the demigods, as well as other worldly languages, including those of the animals, is called a wonderful linguist. It appears from the statement that Krishna can also speak and understand the languages of the animals. An old woman in Vrindavana, present at the time of Krishna's pastimes, once stated in surprise, "How wonderful it is that Krishna, who owns the hearts of all the young girls of Rajabhumi, can nicely speak the language of Rajabhumi with the gopis, while in Sanskrit he speaks with the demigods, and in the language of the animals he can even speak with the cows and buffalo. Similarly, in the language of the Kashmir province, and with the parrots and other birds, as well as in most common languages. Krishna is so expressive." She inquired from the gopis as to how Krishna had become so expert in speaking so many different types of languages. Truthful. A person whose word of honor is never broken is called truthful. Krishna once promised Kunti, the mother of the Pandavas, that he would bring her five sons back from the battlefield of Kurukshetra. After the battle was finished, when all the Pandavas had come home, Kunti praised Krishna because his promise was so nicely fulfilled. She said, "Even the sunshine may one day become cool, or the moonshine one day become hot, but still your promise will not fail." Similarly, when Krishna, along with Bhima and Arjuna, went to challenge Jarasandha, he plainly told Jarasandha that he was the eternal Krishna present along with two of the Pandavas. The story is that both Krishna and the Pandavas, in this case Bhima and Arjuna, were Kshatriyas, warrior kings. Jarasandha was also a Kshatriya and was very charitable toward the Brahmanas. Thus Krishna, who had planned to fight with Jarasandha, went to him with Bhima and Arjuna in the dress of Brahmanas. Jarasandha, being very charitable toward the Brahmanas, asked them what they wanted, and they expressed their desire to fight with them. Then Krishna, dressed as a Brahmana, declared himself to be the same Krishna who was the king's eternal enemy. Number 9. Pleasing talker. A person who can speak sweetly even with his enemy just to pacify him is called a pleasing talker. Krishna was such a pleasing talker that after defeating his enemy Kaliya in the water of the Jamuna, he said, "My dear king of the snakes, although I have given you so much pain, please do not be dissatisfied with me. It is my duty to protect these cows, which are worshipped even by the demigods. Only in order to save them from the danger of your presence have I been obliged to banish you from this place." Kaliya was residing within the water of the Jamuna, and as a result, the back portion of that river had become poisoned. Thus, so many cows who had drunk the water had died. Therefore, Krishna, even though he was only 4 or 5 years old, dipped himself into the water, punished Kaliya very severely, and then asked him to leave the place and go elsewhere. Krishna said at that time that the cows are worshipped even by the demigods, and he practically demonstrated how to protect the cows. At least people who are in Krishna consciousness should follow in his footsteps and give all protection to the cows. Cows are worshipped not only by the demigods. Krishna himself worshipped the cows on several occasions, especially on the days of Gopashtami and Govardhana Puja. Number 10, fluent. A person who can speak meaningful words and with all politeness and good qualities is called vavadukha, or fluent. There is a nice statement in Srimad Bhagavatam regarding Krishna speaking politely. When Krishna politely bade his father, Nanda Maharaj, to stop the ritualistic offering of sacrifice to the rain god Indra, a wife of one village cowherd man became captivated. She later thus described the speaking of Krishna to her friends. Krishna was speaking to his father so politely and gently that it was as if he were pouring nectar into the ears of all present there. After hearing such sweet words from Krishna, who will not be attracted to him? Krishna's speech, which contains all good qualities in the universe, is described in the following statement by Uddhava. Quote, the words of Krishna are so attractive that they can immediately change the heart of even his opponent. His words can immediately solve all of the questions and problems of the world. Although he does not speak very long, each and every word from his mouth contains volumes of meaning. These speeches of Krishna are very pleasing to my heart. 11. Highly learned. When a person is highly educated and acts strictly on moral principles, he is called highly learned. A person conversant in different departments of knowledge is called educated. And because he acts on moral principles, he is called morally stout. Together, these two factors constitute learning. Krishna's receiving education from Sandipani Muni is described by Sri Narada Muni as follows. In the beginning, Lord Brahma and others are like clouds of evaporated water from the great ocean of Krishna. In other words, Brahma first received the Vedic education from Krishna as the clouds receive water from the ocean. That Vedic education or instruction which was spoken by Brahma to the world was then reposed on the mountain of Sandipani Muni. Sandipani Muni's instructions to Krishna are like a reservoir of water on the mountain, which flows as a river and goes again to mix with the source, the ocean of Krishna. To be more clear, the idea is that Krishna actually cannot be instructed by anyone, just as the ocean does not receive water from any source but itself. It only appears that the rivers are pouring water into the ocean. So it is clear that Brahma received his education from Krishna, and from Brahma, via the disciplic succession, this Vedic instruction was distributed. Sandipani Muni is likened to the river which is flowing down again to that same original ocean of Krishna. The Siddhas, the inhabitants of Siddha Loka, where all are born with fully developed mystic powers, and the Charanas, the inhabitants of a similar planet, pray to Krishna as follows. My Lord Govinda, the goddess of learning, is decorated with 14 kinds of educational ornaments. Her intelligence is all-pervading within the four departments of the Vedas. Her attention is always on the law books given by great sages like Manu, and she is apparelled in 6 kinds of expert knowledge, namely Vedic evidence, grammar, astrology, rhetoric, vocabulary, and logic. Her constant friends are the supplements of the Vedas, the Puranas, and she is decorated with the final conclusion of all education. And now she has acquired an opportunity to sit with you as a class friend in school, and she is now engaged in your service. Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, does not require any education, but he gives a chance to the goddess of learning to serve him. Being self-sufficient, Krishna does not require the service of any living entity, although he has many devotees. It is because Krishna is so kind and merciful that he gives everyone the opportunity to serve him, as though he required the service of his devotees. Regarding his moral principles, it is stated in Srimad Bhagavatam that Krishna is ruling over Vrindavana as death personified to the thieves, as pleasing bliss to the pious, as the most beautiful Cupid to the young girls, and as the most munificent personality to the poor men. He is as refreshing as the full moon to his friends, and to his opponents he is the annihilating fire generated from Lord Shiva. Krishna is therefore the most perfect moralist in his reciprocal dealings with different kinds of persons. When he is death personified to the thieves, it is not that he is without moral principles or that he is cruel. He is still kind, because to punish thieves with death is to exhibit the highest quality of moral principles. In Bhagavad Gita also, Krishna says that he deals with different kinds of persons according to their dealings with him. Verse? What is the verse? Can't we all say it together? Yeyatamam prapadyante tamstataiva bhajamyaham mamavart manuvartante manusha parta sarvashaha. As they surrender unto me, I reward them accordingly. Everyone follows my path in all respects, O son of Kunti. It's Bhagavad Gita 4.11. It's an important verse. It's also extended into the Bhagavatam when there's discussion about Krishna's reciprocal dealings with the gopis, and finally he says that he can't honor this verse because normally he's able to reciprocate, but he says the gopis' love is so perfectly pure and intense that he has no way to reciprocate. So he said, you'll have to be satisfied with your own pure devotion. This is one of the this is a focal point of the Srimad Bhagavatam, which actually extends then into the Chaitanya Charitamrita, because Krishna himself, from that position, wants to experience what his devotees are experiencing, the love which is so pure and intense that he himself can't reciprocate it. So he wants to take the part of the devotee who's experiencing that kind of love. So that's an important verse. Yeyata mam prapadyante. And it's also important to remember that Krishna is always ready to reciprocate, and in fact he's fulfilling the desires of all living entities. And those who can purify them, their desires and desire to serve Krishna will be rewarded with his service. If one maintains material desires, then one will receive the result of that, which is that one will get material facility and therefore become more entangled in material life, which is not a good idea. Because there's a point at which there's no end to the cycle of material desires. They go on and on. One thing leads to the next. And one simply remains in a conditioned state in the material world. But if one takes the path of devotional service and the trouble to purify oneself, although in the beginning there may be a slight bit of pain to overcome the pushings of the senses for the sake of diverting them towards the engagement in Krishna service, it's altogether worth it in order to come to the steady stage of devotional service where one's no longer influenced by the pushings of the senses, which is altogether possible because of the power of devotional service. And Krishna does help from within the heart. So just continuing, Krishna's dealings with devotees and with non-devotees, although different, are equally good. Because Krishna is all good, his dealings with everyone are always good. So what are some of the qualities we've heard so far? That you remember, any points that you remember so far from what you heard from Krishna's qualities? Shraddha.
Krishna is very fluent, and each of the word that he speaks is full of multiple meanings. And I was actually thinking that Prabhupada was also so fluent in writing. And if you look at when we read the purports, we have to scrutinizingly read it because each sentence is loaded, you know, with so much of information. So I was just drawing a parallel there.
Thank you.
I like the sweet talking. Especially, it's very difficult in this material world, like sweet talking or anything.
Are you talking softly? Because it's hard for me to hear. And maybe that microphone needs to go up. Although your words are very sweet, I can barely hear them. I just want to make sure everyone can hear.
So sweet talking is I liked an example Prabhupada gave, like when he was talking to Kalia, how he very sweetly told him that why he's punishing him, because the cows are getting, and then because of protecting them. If he wanted, he could have told that I am Supreme Personality of Godhead. It's like my, but he's very sweet.
Thank you, very nice. What else?
I'm remembering that he was a linguist, like he knew all the language, he could converse with the gopis in the language of Brajabhumi and with the animals in their language, and everybody would love him. But the question came to me that at that time in Brajabhumi, did they... I always thought that everyone spoke Sanskrit at that time, so...
They speak Vraj.
I thought that Vraj came later, that language. So that was like information, something I learned today. That at that point also they spoke the Vraj language. Yeah.
I see.
He was highly learned. So it's one thing just to be educated, but it's another thing to be educated and have your morals.
Educated with morals. Thank you very much. What else? Yes. Kathleen, you can pass that backwards.
It mentioned that Krishna is so merciful that he doesn't need any service from anybody. Still, he allows chances for everybody to serve him.
Thank you. Very nice. What else?
Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. I like the statement of he was... what's called as mitabhashi, he would speak only, very few words, but each word was potent with the proper meaning at the right context, so that he could convey what we wanted to convey in few words, and again, as they said, sweetly and politely, etc. But
although he doesn't speak for a long time, every word,
and each word is
like in the Bhagavad Gita, we have this experience. It's not a really extensive book like the Brahma Vaivarta Purana. So someone was telling me that oftentimes sadhus will quote from that because no one would be able to find the quote anyway. It's such an extensive scripture. No one will bother to look it up because it's so hard to find anything. It's so many thousands of verses and so forth. Bhagavad Gita is so short. Just within half an hour, Krishna gave the essence of everything. Anything else?
I also liked about the highly learned, I like the mention there that Sandipan Muni teaching to Krishna is actually a river going back to the ocean. And also Krishna learning is actually a chance to Saraswati to serving. I never looked at it from that perspective.
Yeah, that's very nice.
In the same example, Prabhupada gives like how sea, actually the rivers, it seems that river are flowing into the sea, so sea gets the water, but it's actually it's the sea's water which comes to the river.
Right. Yeah. Beautiful. Om Ajnana Timirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Milidham Dena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Who could say what that verse means? Om Ajnana Timirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya. What is a Shalakaya? Is it a torch?
Yeah. Shalak is a torch.
Really? Look and see what they have translated here. Om, an address, Ajnana of ignorance, Timira, by the darkness, Andasya, of one who was blinded, Jnana Anjana, by the ointment of spiritual knowledge, Shalakaya, by a medical instrument called a Shalaka, which was used to apply medical ointment to eyes afflicted with cataracts. Chakshu, eyes, Udmilitam, were opened. Yena, by whom, Tasmai, unto him, Shri Gurave, my spiritual master, Namaha. So we don't have the word for word there, do we, Ramananda? So I'll start saying it, and you can hear to start with. This verse we repeat often. We should know the word for word. Om, address. Ajnana, of ignorance. Timira, by darkness. So if I was going to say by darkness, what would I say? Timira. If you named your kid Timira, what would people think? Timira. What does Timira mean? By the darkness. Timira. By the darkness. So I'll say the word, you say what it means. Timira. I say the in English, you say the Sanskrit. By the darkness. Timira. By the darkness. Timira. By the darkness. And what would you say if someone named their son Timira? You'd say, that's an interesting name. Ajnana of ignorance. So what does jnana mean? What does ajnana mean? So if you put an A in front of the word, what does it often do? So there's jnana and ajnana means? Of ignorance. Timira. By the darkness. Timira. By the darkness. Ajnana. Of ignorance. Timira. Ajnana. Timira. 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 By the darkness. 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 Timira. 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 Om. Ajnana. Ajnana of ignorance. Of ignorance. Of ignorance. Of ignorance. Timira. By the darkness. Om. Ajnana. Timira. By the darkness. Of ignorance. Address. Om. Ajnana. Timira. Andasya. Of one who was blinded. Andasya. 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 Of one who is blinded. Of one who was blinded. Andasya. Of one who was blinded. Andasya. By the darkness. Timira. Of the darkness. Andasya. By the darkness. Timira. Of one who is blinded. Andasya. Of one who was blinded. Andasya. Of one who is blinded. Andasya. By the darkness. Timira. By the darkness. Timira. By the darkness. Timira. By the darkness. Timira. Timira, Timira, of one who was blinded, of one who was blinded, of one who was blinded, Andasya, Andasya, Om, Ajnana, Timira, Andasya. So we have this imagery of one who is blinded by the darkness of ignorance, which means in Sanskrit, which is andasya, timirandasya, ajnana of ignorance. So the darkness is ignorance. Can you give an example of being blinded by ignorance? Can you give a specific example of what it's like to be blinded by ignorance? Can you give an example from your own life of how you might have been blinded by ignorance at some time? Okay.
I was just marveling as you were unfolding the meanings that I was blinded. I was thinking Shalakya means torch, but then my spiritual master opened my eyes and told me it means something else. It's okay. An instrument used to put ointment in the eyes. That's a fresh example.
Balij Mardan.
I was also blinded by marketing campaign, so I got some good things, but there is a clauses in the bottom which we did not notice. So I was blinded by the contract, so I have to pay to cancel this, like $100, $200 to cancel this.
Okay.
So, yeah.
I've been blinded by a couple of bad relationships.
Blinded by bad relationships. Entered in thinking that it was all good, and then it wasn't, maybe. Yeah? One more? Only one.
I was blinded by the thought that money could solve problems.
Blinded by the thought that money could solve problems. Yeah, so one's born into this ignorance. I don't know where I came from. I don't know where I'm going. Little babies are just dependent on their environment. They have no idea how they came into the world, and they just start identifying with their immediate environment. And people identify themselves as their body. This is ignorance also. The idea that I'm a man, I'm a woman, I'm a cat, I'm a dog, the eternal spirit soul becomes intimately connected with the physical body and mind and thinks this is me. I'm an American or I'm an Indian. This is ignorance. It's not knowledge, actually. Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, knowledge is to know the difference between the soul and the body. He says, Kshetrajnam chapi mam vidhi sarva kshetri shubharata kshetra kshetrajnayo jnanam yatach jnanam matam mama. That the body is a field, and the soul, the Atma, is the knower of the field. And one who knows the difference between these two is known to be in knowledge. So anything besides that is ignorance. So what chapter does that come from in Bhagavad Gita? 13. 13th chapter is the knowledge, the field, and then knower, the field, explained. Also talking about the super soul. Nature, the enjoyer, and consciousness. So this verse, we say, is to show gratitude to one who opens one's eyes with knowledge. And it's the example given here is that you have cataracts, you can't see anything. My good friend Satya Narayan, the tailor in Vrindavan, whom I've been going to since I can remember in the 1970s, have a nice, sweet relationship with him and his family, and always go and sit and talk for some time. For a few years, his cataracts got so bad that he couldn't sew anymore. So his son took over for a year. But he went and got a cataract operation, and then he could see again. He went in, and the doctor used the shalaka, the medical instrument, to remove the cataract, and then he could see. Such a relief to be able to see. So this verse is talking about like an operation. Someone comes in and someone helps you to see what is the truth, what is the difference between the body and the soul, and what is the purpose of life, how to move, what to do and what not to do, and so forth. This is real knowledge. So when we say this prayer, it's very deep prayer of gratitude towards the spiritual master or the spiritual masters who are helping us to remove the ignorance which holds us back from our real purpose in life. So I'll continue. Om Ajnana Timira Andhasya. Okay, next word is Jnana Anjana. So this word Anjana is an ointment. So the metaphor here is Jnana Anjana. Everyone say Jnana Anjana. Jnana Anjana. So you could name your kid Jnana Anjana. Jnana Anjana. Jnana Anjana means the ointment of knowledge. So there's kind of an ointment you can put in your eyes, and then suddenly you can see. So that would be nice to have a little cream. Just like that. And then your life would be sublime. Everything, you could see Krishna everywhere. This is also mentioned in the Brahma Samhita. Premanjana Churita Bhakti Vilochanena Prema Anjana. So if you have this cream, this anjana, this ointment of prema. So it's saying Premanjana Churita Bhakti Vilochanena. If you take this anjana, this ointment of prema, and your eyes are anointed with that, then they can see Krishna everywhere at all times. There's no hindrance. Krishna's everywhere. He's within every atom. And he's within our heart. So the only thing that blocks me is the darkness of ignorance. So if I'm able to get this ointment, we're after the ointment, we're looking for it. I passed by yesterday, I took a walk. When I just got off the plane, I walked downtown Burlingame, and I was walking by one shop, and they sell all kinds of creams. And they're very expensive, I think. Although I've never priced them quite, but I was thinking, boy, that's a lot of creams. And they advertise them for, they're like serums. You put them on your skin, you put them around your eyes and all kinds of stuff, and you're supposed to turn young again, or at least it's to prevent you from growing old. And there's this idea always that, boy, if I could just get it in a bottle. Because I've seen these advertisements before, and they always come out with new ones. There's companies that dedicate a lot of money to this, and they name them special things that if you it'll rejuvenate your health, right? It'll rejuvenate your skin. You'll look young again. In fact, downtown Palo Alto, there's that one shop that sells all these anjanas. And what's it named? Eternal Bliss or something like that? Eternal Beauty? Eternal Beauty. And the idea is it'll come out of a little tube. So that's the kind of analogy that's being given here. If you can get this Jnana Anjana or the Prema Anjana, it's like, I want that Anjana, that Anjana. The other stuff, you know, it's really a fake out. They use all kinds of basically the same ingredients mixed differently, but it's the packaging that really counts. If it comes from a company that charges a lot more and everybody's heard of it and they advertise a lot, then everyone thinks this will really work. But in the end, nothing really works for preserving the body. Maybe a little bit here and there, but ultimately, it doesn't work. So, this Premanjana and the Jnana Anjana, everyone say? That is what we're after, the Jnana Anjana. So, who do you go to get the Jnana Anjana? That's the person, the guru, who can give you the Jnana Anjana, because the guru has received that Jnana Anjana from his guru and is a distributor. You can become a distributor. This is multi-level. It's a multi-level opportunity. Did you get the product? Did you try the product? What's your product? Jnana Anjana. Take a little of this stuff and you can see things clearly. You don't have to be an idiot. Okay, that works. Jnana Anjana. By the ointment of spiritual knowledge. Now, where can you buy that here in the Bay Area? Wouldn't somebody want that for Christmas? What do you want for Christmas? I want the ointment of spiritual knowledge. That's what I want this year. And then you could go online and look on, where would you look? Amazon? Go on Amazon.com and put in ointment of spiritual knowledge. I want Jnana Anjana and just see if they get it, if you can get some of that. You think it's possible? I think you could probably get every other kind of ointment. People would advertise for every other kind of ointment that you could possibly get. Even the Ayurveda medicine has the idea of Mrityu Sanjivani. There's something you can take that will prolong your life for fantastic periods of time and so forth. That was used when Maya Dhanava was working for the demons and Lord Shiva, who's known as Tripurari, he was fighting against them, and every time he would kill them, Maya Dhanava created a pool so they could be dipped in this ointment and then would come back to life. So he couldn't win until Lord Vishnu came to help him. So Lord Vishnu took the form of a cow and Lord Shiva took the form of a calf. Or Brahma took the form of a calf. And they went to this fortress in the sky that Maya Dhanava had created. And they walked up to that pool of nectar that was bringing them back to life, and they started drinking it. And all the demons were looking, and they couldn't do anything about it. They were held back by Lord Vishnu's power. They said they're drinking all our nectar. And they couldn't stop them. So once all the nectar was taken by the cow and the calf, then Lord Shiva was able to defeat the demons handily. Therefore, he's known as Tripurari. Tripurari. Okay, so Jnana Anjana, it's a very valuable ointment. And later we'll send some representatives out around the city and somebody to Google and see if we can find this, the Jnana Anjana, this ointment of spiritual knowledge. If we can, we'll start marketing it here. Okay, Shalakaya. 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 By a medical instrument called a shalaka. By a medical instrument called a shalaka, which is used to apply medical ointment to eyes afflicted with cataracts. So what's a shalakaya? Thank you. Chakshuhu, eyes. Chakshu, eyes. Chakshu, eyes. Chakshu, eyes. Unmilitam, we're opened. Unmilitam, we're opened. We're opened. We're opened. We're opened. We're opened. By the darkness. By the darkness, by the darkness, andasya yena, by whom, yena, by whom, tasmai, unto him, tasmai, unto him, Shri Gurave, my spiritual master, namaha, obeisances. So I'll say, you repeat. Om, address. Ajnana, of ignorance. Timira, by the darkness. Andhasya, of one who is blinded. Jnana Anjana, by the ointment of spiritual knowledge. Shalakaya, by a medical instrument called a shalaka, which is used to apply ointment to the eyes afflicted with cataracts. Chakshuhu, eyes. Unmilitam, were opened. Yena, by whom? Tasmai, unto him. Shri Gurave, my spiritual master. Namaha, obeisances. I offer my respectful obeisances unto my spiritual master, who has opened my eyes, which were blinded by the darkness of ignorance, with the torchlight of knowledge. So I could see how, you know, the translation doesn't exactly match the word for word. But the idea is very clear, and it's an important verse to remember, that especially that I'm in ignorance and I need help, and we have to take help from a higher source, and the higher source is Krishna. Krishna has representatives, those who are following in the line of disciplic succession, taking the knowledge, imbibing it themselves, and they can help us. And Krishna helps us directly also, from the Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, directly from within the heart. So if one is needy and humble and open to this kind of help and says this verse, that I'm born into the darkness of ignorance and I need help. Please give me the ointment. Show me the light. Then that's very easy to achieve, actually, because Krishna and his devotees are always willing to give help. That's their preoccupation in life. So we just have to be receptive, right? Receptivity is important. So today we're going to look a little bit at the fifth canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, and the starting point is something that's that is relatable to most people, because everyone has dual responsibilities in this world, in that there are duties to do. Along with one's birth, one becomes obligated to do certain kinds of work in this world. And according to one's nature, one is compelled to do a certain kind of work. And due to our birth, we're also obligated to associate with certain kinds of people, in a certain family, in a certain nation, and so forth. And this opening chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam is very encouraging in that it talks about how devotional service is so powerful that it isn't affected by one's external circumstances, ultimately. Although it even may seem that somebody is engaged in material activities, but if they're simultaneously engaged in devotional service, then the devotional part will prevail. And it's practically unheard of that someone is born into the world who's not affected by the material conditioning, because one comes into this world affected. Even Shukadeva Goswami, he wasn't affected, but my point is that he was very careful not to be affected by it. Even though he was a liberated soul from within the womb, when he came out, he ran away from home immediately. He didn't wait till he was 16. He was 16 when he came out of the womb. It's a good time to run away from home. Cover your ears. And he went off he was very careful not to touch the material energy at all, because it's so contaminating. The mantra effect. Mantra was the maidservant of Kaikeyi. And Kaikeyi was very happily engaged in the service of Dasarath, her husband, and her son was Bharat. And she equally loved Ramachandra. And at the time when Dasarath decided to anoint Ramachandra as the king regent, and he himself would begin to step back from power, all the citizens were joyful. Everyone was joyful in the whole kingdom. Kaikeyi was joyful. But then Mantra, who was an envious person, who was her maidservant, who had a vested interest, began to speak into her ears envious words that this is just a plan, a plot to take away your son's rightful claim to the throne, and because of that, you'll lose your standing. Actually, what Mantra was thinking is, I'll lose my standing, because she was being honored as the maidservant of Kaikeyi. And Kaikeyi was the chief queen of Dasarath. He had great affection for her. And at first she resisted, but envious words are so powerful that they entered within her ears and within her heart, and then her mind changed. And so the material world is so infectious that one has to be careful as one moves about the world not to be infected by the three modes of material nature. Purusha prakriti stohi bhunte prakriti jan gunan karanam guna sangosya sarasad yoni janmasu. Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita 13:22. 22 or 20? 22? 20? That 22. That the cause of our various elevations and degradations here in the material world is due to our association, our sangha, with the various modes of material nature. So a devotee practicing Krishna consciousness is very careful not to become recontaminated by the modes of material nature. So in the story, in the beginning of the Srimad Bhagavatam, it opens, the scene opens with Priyavrata, who's a Naishtika Brahmachari, and that's what his intention is, to remain celibate for his whole life and simply remain focused and concentrated on cultivating Krishna consciousness. And who's his guru? Narada Muni. What prayer might he offer to Narada Muni upon seeing him? Om Ajnana Timirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Nina Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. And Narada was very happy to have such a disciple who was so dedicated. And then everything was turned on its head because Swayambhuvamana, who is the father of Priyavrata, then came and said, we need your services. And that meant he wanted him to become worldly engaged in the world and managing. Managing takes a lot of endeavor and concentration on worldly things, putting together all the pieces and so forth. And Priyavrata was not so inclined. And meanwhile, he's sitting there with his guru. And then his grandfather came. That is, Priyavrata's grandfather came. And Priyavrata's grandfather was Brahma. So there's this kind of nice relationship between the grandson and the grandfather. So almost in a joking way, in a smiling way, Brahma was saying to Priyavrata. And he came not alone. He also brought with him the personified Vedas. Can you imagine? Stop by your house, the personified Vedas come in. It's like, well, what can I say? You know that verse? Well, they do. The personified Vedas were there along with other sages and Brahma. And very serious, he came to tell him that you have a vow to only concentrate on practicing Krishna consciousness, to remain celibate, and we have a different idea. We want you to rule the world. Along with that instruction, they were also saying that you won't become contaminated if you take this up. And one of the important reasons that he wouldn't become contaminated was because it was an authorized order coming down from the, well, tautology. It was given by an order given by an authority, the bona fide authority. If one takes that, then whatever the circumstances are, one won't be contaminated by the modes of material nature. However, if one concocts what one's duty is and acts whimsically without this kind of direction, then one's on one's own, and anything can happen. You're responsible for the result. Now, interestingly, in this story, two authorities are saying different things. Has this ever happened to you? Two authorities say two different things. It happens all the time. In our organization, ISKCON, this can happen. Therefore, there's this kind of balancing act going on all the time in ISKCON. The devotees have pored over this, like how to manage a society. Because you have guru, and then there's a temple president, there's a GBC. There's like a managerial aspect to the whole ISKCON concept, you know, which is there has to be some kind of bureaucracy, although I don't like bureaucracy very much myself. There has to be something. Otherwise, how will things go on? How will there be an organization? At the same time, there may be some need coming from that side, some order coming from that side, and then there may be an individual order given to you by somebody locally, and then you might have a relationship with a mentor, and you may have a relationship with your guru who has a specific thing that he or she says, you know, do this. Then how do you work that out? And this was the situation that Priyavrata was in, because Narada Muni was saying, just don't look that way. Stay here. Stay cultivating this spiritual knowledge and don't be deviated. This can happen. I see with a lot of the Indian devotees, the parents are saying one thing. It's like, come back, you know. a little Krishna consciousness is okay, but let's not go overboard here. This Hare Krishna stuff, that's pretty intense, right? Does that sound familiar? So anyway, Narada Muni was saying, stay focused, and then Swayambhu Vamadu, his father, and Brahma came and said, we need you. And it's explained in the text that he had to be manishaya, which means he had to use his intelligence in that case. How to follow both. That means you have to have mature intelligence. First of all, you have to be sincere. You have to want to do the right thing. And if you're sincere, you don't have a vested interest, and you get two different instructions from two authorities, bona fide authorities, then you have to use your intelligence. How do I follow both of them at the same time? And that's what he did. So he accepted the order of his grandfather and his father to take up this position of ruling over the universe. And at the same time, he went on with his Krishna consciousness. That's how he followed both. And it's especially mentioned in this chapter how a person who may seemingly be working in the world is not affected by it if he or she is following the instruction to the best of his or her ability and going on with the practice of Krishna consciousness. And in the Bhagavad Gita, there are instructions to this effect. For instance, in the fifth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, what is the name of the fifth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita? Karma Yoga? Action in Krishna consciousness. So there's this idea, Karma Yoga. So karma means work. So you're doing your work, but your work becomes the means for connecting to Krishna. Karma Yoga. And it says action in Krishna consciousness. Not inaction, but there's a way of being active and at the same time being in Krishna consciousness. So you're doing your work, it becomes a way to connect you to Krishna. It's instrumental in connecting you to Krishna, and you're active. So in that chapter, Krishna gives many clues about how to do that. A very powerful verse, 5:10, Bhagavad Gita 5:10. Which we'll look at briefly. And the verse says, we'll look at briefly. 5:10. Brahmanyadaya karmani sangam tyakva karoti aha lipitena sapapena padma patram ivambasa. So here's a metaphor, beautiful metaphor Krishna's giving for the person who lives in the material world, who works. You see, he's doing work. So you look at the word for word. Brahmani, unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead, adhaya. So this is a beautiful word. Adhaya means resigning. You resign. Someone please look up the word resign. Resigning. Resigning. So you resign to Brahmani means unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead, adhaya. So Brahmani, unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead, adhaya, resigning. What does it mean? So karmani, all works. So the first line says that a person is resigning all works unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So you're not just working the way you want to work, but you're working and resigning your work. But we have to find out what the word resigning means to find out if we're doing it right. May we please have the word? Vandika, please, give us the word. We're dying for it.
So resign means voluntarily leaving a job or other position.
Voluntarily leaving a job or other position. Give us more meanings and where it comes from. Use the microphone, please.
Another meaning is to sign again.
To sign again. More. Where does it come from?
Accept that something undesirable cannot be avoided.
Accept that something undesirable cannot be avoided. More, please.
comes from Latin re and signare. Re means back, signare means sign. So what, Mother?
Resign.
And then it form re.
So you redo your contract.
Unseal. Unseal or cancel.
That's nice. Resigning means to resign. So you resign. You have to redo your contract. So we get a contract going here. Go ahead. What else? You have a revelation, please.
No, I was just thinking that when we resign from a job, it was always like you're not signing into anything again. It was like that, I'm not taking on anything again, but it's like the original contract that you had signed.
Yeah, you void your original contract, you resign. You re-sign with Krishna. Like sometimes people move from one sports team to another. They re-sign with somebody else. You could sit up here in the middle. There's plenty of seats. I know, but we're not. We like you. So this is a profound verse, a first part of the verse, just as it starts off. Think of it in practical terms. Redo your contract and sign up with Krishna. Sign on with Krishna. Get a contract going with him. Brahmanyadaya karmani. So you re-sign all your works, you connect them to Krishna. Yes?
So there is also word which really resignation means. When people resign means they have better opportunities.
Yes.
So better opportunity means
hopefully.
Brahman is the better opportunities. That's why it's resign the material attachment and all and engage in the higher authority.
Nice.
That's why re-signing the contract with God.
Yeah, I'm re-signing. I have a better deal somewhere else. I'm signing up. That's pretty logical. When you get a much better deal, somebody gives you a job with 10 times the pay, and then, days off whenever you want and so forth. You say, I'm going to resign. Re-sign. I'm re-signing. Because you can't go to nothing. You have to re-sign somewhere, right? So here, re-sign with Krishna. Brahmanyadhaya karmani. Brahmani. Unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead, resigned, re-sign, karmani, all your works. So connect all your works to Krishna, re-sign. Say, I'm signing up for Krishna's work. Then you have sangam. Sangam. Attachment. Anybody have any attachment in this world? What are you attached to? What do you got going? Anything? Any in particular?
Job.
Attached to your job? Okay. Anyone else attached to anything? To the phone, to the iPhone. Anybody attached to your phone? Everyone raise your hand twice. Okay. So phone, anything else you're attached to?
WhatsApp.
Attached to WhatsApp?
Family.
Family. Family attachment? Anybody attached to a family member? Yes. Car?
Nation.
Attached to your car? Nation? Society?
Prestige.
Well, you could go on forever, right? I mean, our attachments actually define us. You could make a composite and just say, this is who I am. In fact, at the time of death, if you don't have any attachments, it's no big deal. Dying is not a big deal. It's only because of my attachments. So I think, I got to leave that behind. But if you don't have any attachments when you're dying, it's like, oh, all right, no problem. Just like Dadichi. Didichi was a great sage. He had no attachments, only to serving the Lord. So the demigods went to Lord Vishnu to ask him for a solution to killing this great demon, Vritrasura, who was threatening their whole livelihood. And he said, you have to make a weapon to kill him. It's a special weapon. And it's got to come from the bones of Dadichi. And in order to get those bones, you have to ask him for a donation. And what's the donation? I need your bones. And he said, he'll give him. He'll just argue a little bit because he likes to hear about self-realization. So they went and asked him, we need a little donation. Thank you. Hare Krishna. We need a little donation. What do you need? We need your bones. And he concluded that it's a good idea to give whatever one has in charity for the cause of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, because in any case, it's only whatever I have is only bequeathed to me temporarily. It's given under my care for a short amount of time, and I sh- And it's going to be taken away anyway. So I might as well resign what I have to the Supreme Lord. Brahman yadaya karmani. Brahman yadaya karmani. Boy, we'll never forget that, will we? That resign, it means resigning. So he gave the bone. He gave his bones, and they used the weapon to kill Rijasura. It became the thunderbolt of Indra, the bones of Didichi. So Sangam, attachments. He didn't have any attachments, and therefore he was not concerned about giving up his body. The whole posture of one in the material world who's attached to various things for oneself is that I'm fearful. I'm fearful of losing them, and death is the ultimate loss of all these attachments. So now Krishna says, here's your opportunity. Sangam tyaktva, 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 giving up. So this is a very powerful word, tyaktva. So one's giving up, tyaktva, one's giving up. This is a story given in the 11th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. One of the gurus of the Avadhuta Brahman, he had 24 gurus, and they were all derived from his environment. He was learning from his environment. He was taking this help from his environment. So one of the gurus was the Kurari Hawk. So one day he was observing how a small bird had taken a piece of meat. He was a predatory bird. He ate meat. So he grabbed a piece of meat and he flew up into the sky. He was a Kurari Hawk. And then two much larger birds assailed him and began to fight him for the meat. And they said, give it up or die. So he gave it up. And in that instant of him giving it up, as this Avadhuta was watching this scene unfold in nature, he thought, oh, that's easy. Tyaktva. You just give it up. And then he's okay. Sometimes people, they'll fight to the death over something because they're attached to it. Or they'll... I saw one of my relatives. There was a dispute in the family. There were some original portraits drawn of my, painted by some famous artist of my grandparents. And my father and his half-brother, they had a big argument over the paintings, who they actually belonged to, who were they given to. And it went on and on and on for years, including not talking for some time. And Prahlad Maharaj says that sometimes in a family, actually this is mentioned by Judd Barrett, sometimes in a family, over one coin, a dispute over one coin will cause relatives to not talk to one another for the rest of their lives. Something like that, because of this attachment. So he saw that if you simply just let it go, give it up, you become happy. Similarly, Pingala was another great teacher of the Bhagavatam. Her livelihood was that she was a prostitute. And then one night, it just happened this one night where she came out and people weren't stopping. No one stopped. And as they would approach, you think, this person will be perfect. And then you just walk by, one after the other. And then the night kept getting later, and suddenly she was overcome with this feeling of detachment. So, what is the use of my profession? What is the use of my life? And then she began, in that state of detachment, to realize that actually I'm not even this body. The body is really just a frame, and it's covered with skin, and people are attracted to it because of the illusory potency of the Lord. And in that full state of detachment, she began praying to God. Say, please, I want to reconnect with you. And this tyaktva, this feeling of giving up, the petty attachments of the material world, is a wonderful occurrence for those who are giving up for the sake of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And that's the whole spirit of this verse. Tyaktva, giving up. Karoti, performs. Yaha, who? Lipyate, is affected. Look up the word affected, please, as quickly as possible. Lipyate, is affected. Na, never. Saha, he. Papena, by sin. Now here comes the metaphor. Padma patram, a lotus flower. Iva, like. Ambasa, by the water. So here we're going to get the metaphor from Krishna, which is, this is your homework. Find a lotus flower somewhere. A real live lotus flower. This is really real homework. You have to find a lotus flower somewhere and go sit with it for a while. Chant at least one round looking at a lotus flower. Okay? That's fun. Come on, it's a field trip. Padma Patram Ivambasa. The lotus grows in the water, lives in the water, but it's not touched by the water. So Krishna is saying that the person who has re-signed with him, Brahmanyadaya Karmani, his work is for Krishna. Sangam Tyaktva Karotiha, and he's given up attachment to the work. He's not interested in the result for himself because it's for Krishna. Sangam Tyaktva Karotiha, Lipyate, is affected. And the word affected means? Give the most useful meaning. Go ahead.
Acted upon or influenced?
Influenced. Okay. Influenced. And it's like there's an influx. We're influenced by certain things in this world. It flows into us, right? And where does it come from?
It's Latin, which is attack as a disease.
Attacked as a disease. So as I was mentioning before, the modes of material nature are pernicious in the sense that if we even come close to them, we become affected as if attacked by a disease. That we have to keep in mind, that we're vulnerable and we can be attacked by the disease of the three modes of material nature. But here, Krishna is saying, here's how to not be attacked. Brahmanyadaya karmani. So under the Supreme Personality of Godhead, you resign your work to him. Sangam tyakva karotiyaha. And you perform your work. You go on working. You don't stop working. But you give up the attachment to the work because it's for Krishna, it's not for you. Lipyate na sapapena, therefore, na sapapena means that person is not affected by sin. You don't get a reaction for that kind of work. Just like padma patram eva. Eva means like ambasa. Just like the padma patra, the leaf of the lotus. It's right in the water there, but you'll notice it doesn't mix. So it's in the water, but it doesn't mix with it. So Priyavrata was given this instruction, you mix with the world, but at the same time they were saying you won't be affected by it if you continue. First of all, because it's the order, and you accept the order. It's not your idea. It's coming from a higher source. So you take it anyway, even though you don't want to do it at first. And you can also maintain Narada Muni's instruction to you because you go on, even in that situation, performing your devotional service, even as you enter into management, even as you enter into householder life, which is considered the pinnacle of all attachment in the material world, attachment to family members, to wife, husband, children, and the rest. As Krishna says in the 13th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, when he's mentioning that the path of knowledge, and he said the person who's on that path is not attached to the family members. So this is relevant to us. Why? This whole idea of Priyavrata. Somebody give a response why that's relevant. Yes.
Is it because we are also forced to work and just like maybe it is to say that despite our work, our occupational duties, how we can be still in Krishna consciousness. Is it because of that?
Yeah, and we have obligations and we have families and so forth to work with it in, right? So this is a very practical philosophy. Now, any other, let's take some time, like 5 minutes for a few reflections. Anything you've heard so far that stuck in your mind? And we invite everyone who's online also to text in. Do they know the number? Is it on the screen? They can see it on the screen, so we invite you. First of all, we welcome all our online viewers and participants this morning. Let's give them a Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. Please text in if you have any questions or comments. Go ahead, Shraddha.
Maharaj, I was still thinking about resign.
Yes.
Resign.
You want to resign?
Yeah.
Redo your contract.
Redo the contract. And what Bali Mardhan Prabhu had mentioned, that people in general resign when they see a better opportunity. And I was thinking about back in India, it's more common, less here in USA, that sometimes the manager would call and say that it's better that you resign rather than I fire you. And so so sometimes Krishna gives us mercy, and that's his way of saying it's better you resign.
Yeah.
Come over to me.
Better resign than be fired. Yeah. Nice. Thank you very much. Reflections.
Hare Krishna, Prabhu. Very deep insight starts going very logical and scientific. So one thing that struck in my mind was you mentioned about Sangam attachment. So every one of us is attached with different aspects in life. So, and that is the, you said that at the point of death, if we don't have any attachments, then there's no reason of fearing from death. So while living, if you're detached, then you're living like a free soul, a liberated soul, even in your life.
That's true, yeah. And mentioned by Rupa Goswami, Iha yasya harera dasya karmana manasa gira nikila apyavastastu jivan mukta suuchite, a person who, while living in the body, which indicates that one's interacting with the objects of the senses and so forth, who uses all of the senses for the purpose of serving Krishna, is a liberated soul even while within the body. You don't have a spiritual body, you have a liberated body, a liberated material body. And Prabhupada gives the example, if you take an iron rod and you put it into fire and you make the fire hotter and hotter and hotter, then soon or after some time, the iron bar will heat up and become red hot. And then you can't distinguish between the iron bar and the fire itself. They're both fire. It assumes the quality of fire. So even though one may have a material body and mind, when it's engaged, when it's connected to Krishna, when you resign your work to Krishna and you connect it through the process of karma yoga, then the body itself and the mind itself then becomes spiritualized. Brahmarpanam brahmahavir brahmagnau brahmanohutam brahmaiva tena gantavyam brahma karma samadhina. Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, he confirms this principle, that anything that is used in the service of Brahman also takes on the same quality as Brahman, because matter is only separated by consciousness. It's only separated from spirit by consciousness, because it's set aside as this is something separate from God. Therefore, it loses its spiritual quality. Therefore, in the original four verses of the Srimad Bhagavatam, Lord Krishna tells Brahma, Ratertam ya pratyeta na pratyeta chatmani tadvidyaratmano mayam yata abhaso yata tamaha. Here's the definition of illusion or maya. That is, anything you see that's separate from me. Because actually, everything's Krishna. He's Advaita Gyan Tattva. He's non-dual. He's everything's God. And if you set aside something as that's different from God, that's maya, that's illusion, because everything has its connection one way or the other. Other reflections?
Hare Krishna Prabhuji. So, just to add what Prabhuji said, what attachment means, I saw literally yesterday, I was at a funeral yesterday of my friend, and they were ready to put the body in the furnace for cremation purpose, and the friend's mom won't let the body go. She was like holding it that, you know, I won't let you go. She was so attached. And then the owner of the mortuary came and said, you know, we are going to close. The body has to go in the furnace now. And she was literally holding the body, and, you know, it's like the literal example of how things happen.
Yeah, that story is also given in the Srimad Bhagavatam about the great king Suyajna. And he was a valorous king, won so many battles, famous all over the world, and then he entered his final battle, which he was killed. And when he fell to the ground on the battlefield, he was biting his lip to show his valor. His normally beautiful black hair was filled with dust and disheveled, and his arms were broken. He was slashed, and he fell, had fallen to the ground in a heap. And when the battlefield cleared, his wives came from the palace, and they were clutching his body, and they were wailing. And there's a certain time in which the body should be burned so that the soul can be relieved of having to be attached to that particular body. And that time was coming. So Yamaraj, even from the lower planetary systems where he resides, heard the wailing of these wives, the queens, and he went to that place on the battlefield in the form of a small child. He said, so why are you crying? And they said, our husband, the king, is dead. And he said, well, I don't understand. He's right there. And they said, no, you don't understand, little boy. He's died. He's gone away. He said, you don't understand. He's got the same ears, the same eyes, the same legs. And they said, who are you, little boy? And he said, I'm the one who's come here to teach you that you never saw your husband. Because all the time you thought this was him. You were only seeing his external features. You never actually saw the soul. And then in the Bhagavad Gita 15th chapter, Krishna says, Ukram antam stitam vapi bunjanam vagunan vitam vimudanana pashanti pashanti jnana chakshusha. That an intelligent person, one whose eyes are trained in knowledge, they've got the shalakaya, of knowledge, they're not blind. They understand that the soul, the actual atma, the person within the body has stepped out. This is death. He says that utkramantam, he stepped out. Krama means to step. Utkramantam, he just stepped out. He stepped out for a minute. See there? He just stepped out for a minute. He's dead. Utkramantam stitam vapi bunjana vagunanvitam vimudha nanupashanti. A vimudha, a person who's very foolish, not just foolish, but very foolish, vimudha, na anupashanti, he can't see that, what's happening. Nanupashanti, pashanti jnana chakshusha. But a person who has jnana chakshusha, again, this idea of eyes with knowledge, they're anointed with knowledge, jnana chakshusha, he can see what just happened. Nonetheless, when somebody dies, there's this effect called shmashan vairagya, which means there's the renunciation of the crematorium. Then when everyone, even materialistic people, when somebody dies and then you push the body into the furnace, everyone's going, wow, this is real. Ram nam satya hai. Right? They say that, you know, this name, this whole thing is, this spiritual thing is the real thing. This other thing is a fake out. You can see it for yourself for about half a second. And then everyone, if you're Irish, you go to the bar and, you know, everyone like, let's forget about it, you know. And life goes on. But those who are actually dedicated to truth and have decided, I'm not going to suffer this in this ignorance anymore, they keep this in the forefront. They understand that this is the primary cultivation of life, is to understand what happens at the time of death, how we're moving from one body to the next. Two more reflections. Yes.
The point that you mentioned that whatever we have is bequeathed to us temporarily and it will eventually be taken away. So might as well give it off voluntarily when we can.
Yeah.
So, very wonderful point.
Yeah. Nice point.
Hare Krishna, Prabhuji. I have a similar experience regarding death. I mean, a few months ago, right? I think it was the week before you left to Vrindavan. We had a like nice thing going on in the temple, you know. I mean, it was like Wednesday class, and then we had the Prabhupada festival. So normally, like when I'm here, like 3 days a week, right? I feel very good, in the sense that when I go back to work, I don't have a hangover or anything like that. You know, I'm right into my schedule. So that Monday, right, I went to work and, you know, I put my bag on my desk and then I heard my neighbors, you know, they were like some woman around the administrative office and then they started crying. And then I realized something is not right. And then within a split second, you know, I came to know that. So there is a lady called Rachel North that sits right across my cube and she passed away. So many thoughts, you know, like, especially when something like this happens, right? Unusual circumstances, all the things that you heard in the class, you know, come flashing by. So some of the things where, you know, you always think about Supreme, you know, realign yourself, don't take anything for granted. So many things, you know, because for some time we almost think that, you know, we are, nothing can beat us, right? But then there is always that circumstance that hits you and makes you realize that you should always take cover.
Yes, there's no universal written law that you can't die in your cubicle at work. So keep that in mind. Everyone's like, I can't die here. I'm going to die in a meadow surrounded by, you know, singing angels or something like that. You may be asked to leave in your cubicle in front of a, you know, in front of a screen that's open. And so it's important to always remain, always have connection with Krishna, not give that connection up. So this Priyavrata is a very encouraging example of how one lives in the world but is not affected by it. And one of the themes of this first section, this first chapter describing the activities of Maharaj Priyavrata, is that a devotee is never lost. A devotee is never lost. And this is something to keep in mind. Krishna is so attentive to what every living entity is doing and what their intentions are. If even once someone expresses the intention that Krishna, I want to surrender to you, and then later on forgets what one's intention was, Krishna doesn't forget. Inasmuch as even in our sojourn in the material world, those who have material desires who don't get to fulfill them, even up to the end of the destruction of the material world, or at the end of the entire material creation, there's a cataclysm in which it's all burned up. It's all blown first by the winds, high winds that dry up all the oceans. That's a high wind warning coming over the weather.com. High winds that it'll be so high it'll dry up everything. And then fire comes out from the mouth of Sankarshan down at the nether regions of the universe. And everything eventually is just burned to ashes. The whole thing. Keep that in mind. Whatever it is, it's going to be burned up. Then all the energies are again wound back up within the body of Mahavishnu, and they stay there for millions and millions of years. And that includes all the living entities, all the ones who had a little business going here in the material world. All their things are put on hold, and they get wound up in the body of Mahavishnu, and they stay there for millions and millions of years. But then when he exhales, and for him it's only an exhalation or an inhalation, He exhales, and then the whole thing comes out again, and the creation starts over again. Now, the living entities who were suspended at that time, the Lord is very kind, and he reminds each one of them what their desires were previous in the previous creation, and they get to take up again where they left off. So don't let desires linger. And Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, yang vapi smaran bhavam, whatever you think of, whatever your lingering desires are, you let them hang around, and then at the time of death, they'll be fulfilled. Material nature is systematic and will take into account everything, and then your desires are fulfilled. So one should carefully cultivate Krishna consciousness and remember how valuable even one moment, if even one moment of sincere endeavor in Krishna consciousness is never lost, what to speak of a whole lifetime of dedication to the process of Krishna consciousness. We need to hear this over and over again, because the pull towards obligation to the material world and attachments in the material world is so strong that one needs to be reinforced regularly to redirect one's intelligence, one's attachments, one's work towards Krishna is very important. So that's my intention here, is to talk about how the devotee is never lost, how Krishna is so kind. So we should try to gain as many assets in devotional service as possible while we have the opportunity. While we have the opportunity, as many assets as possible. I'll read one verse which goes to this point of how the spiritual assets are never lost. This is a famous verse from the Srimad Bhagavatam, 3rd canto, 25th verse, 25th chapter, 38th verse, 3:25:38. Nakari chinmat parashanta rupe nakshanti no me nimisho ledi hetihi yesham aham priya atma sutascha saka guru surido daiva mishtam. Not. Karhichit. Ever. Matparaha. My devotees. Shantarupe. Oh, mother. So, who's speaking here? The great saint Devahuti. She's speaking to? Who's Kapiladeva in relationship to Devahuti? Son. So, this is a beautiful pastime. Here, there they are. So Kardamamuni, and this also relates to our discussion, Kardamamuni was a great sage. And he meditated, he performed yoga for 10,000 years. 10,000 years. And at the culmination of his yoga practice, the Lord appeared before him, riding on Garuda. And Kardamamuni offered prayers to the Lord. The Lord accepted his prayers and his sincere practice. He said, "What would you like? I give you benediction." He said, "I'm sorry to say, but I'd like a wife." And Lord Narayan's answer is extremely revealing. He said, I know, I've already arranged it. This is relevant to all of us. Krishna knows. And there's a way in which, once knowing that Krishna knows, there's no reason to really ask specifically. There's no necessity. But also in this pastime of Kardamamuni, it's important to note that he's a pure devotee, and at the same time he's asking for a wife. And he also doesn't become entangled, partly because it's his duty. He was ordered at the time, these sages were ordered to actually populate the universe and so forth. So partly it's his duty, and it's also in the course of doing his service that he asked for a wife so he could actually do his duty. And when he asked for that, he was not affected or contaminated by that desire. So this, I'm again showing that there's a way in which we may work in this world and according to direction of superior authority, it may even appear that we're mixing with the material energy. But because it's authorized service and because it's done for the intention of pleasing Krishna, one's not affected by it. So Kardama Muni then had a son after he was married, and the son happened to be the Supreme Personality of Godhead who appeared in his family, and Kapila Dev. Then he left home because his arrangement was with Devahuti, who is the daughter of Swayambhuva Manu, that after giving her a son, then he would go off and take to the full path of concentration on his devotional service. Then his son, Kapila Dev, became the guardian of Devahuti and instructed her on the path of spiritual knowledge. I love the way it all starts. She asked him the question, and her preface to asking the question said, I'm sick and tired of the harassment of the material senses. I can't tolerate it anymore. You get the feeling when you hear her prayers that she's really ready to hear. And this is the qualification for hearing properly. One has to be materially exhausted. Don't go to the guru, don't go to Krishna asking for something for yourself that to entangle you more in the material world. I mean, you can, and actually in the Bhagavatam it's recommended if you want anything you should go to Krishna, but you should be prepared for the consequences because Krishna's really smart and he knows how to give you things in such a way that even after you ask for him, you don't want him anymore. And then you'll say, okay, Krishna, I just want you. It's happened with Dhruva Maharaj and many others. So in the teachings of Lord Kapila Dev to his mother, he gives this verse. The Lord continued, my dear mother, devotees who receive such transcendental opulences are never bereft of them. Neither weapons nor the change of time can destroy such opulences, because the devotees accept me as their friend, their relative, their son, preceptor, benefactor, and supreme deity. They cannot be deprived of their possessions at any time. So this is an indication of whatever way in which you resign your possessions, your relationships, and so forth to Krishna, they become eternal, and you never lose that. Whereas in the material world, everything that we have will lose. That's the contract here. And here's the purport. It is stated in Bhagavad Gita that one may elevate himself to higher planetary systems, even up to Brahmaloka, by dint of pious activities. But when the effects of such pious activities are finished, one again comes back to this earth to begin a new life of activities. Thus, even though one is promoted to the higher planetary system for enjoyment and a long duration of life, still that is not a permanent settlement. But as far as the devotees are concerned, their assets, the achievement of devotional service, and the consequent opulence of Vaikuntha, even on this planet, are never destroyed. In this verse, Kapila Dev addresses his mother as Shanta Rupa, indicating that the opulences of devotees are fixed because devotees are eternally fixed in the Vaikuntha atmosphere, which is called Shanta Rupa, because it is in the mode of pure goodness, undisturbed by the modes of passion and ignorance. Once one is fixed in the devotional service of the Lord, his position of transcendental service cannot be destroyed, and the pleasure and service simply increase unlimitedly. For the devotees engaged in Krishna consciousness in the Vaikuntha atmosphere, there is no influence of time. In the material world, the influence of time destroys everything, but in the Vaikuntha atmosphere, there is no influence of time or of the demigods, because there are no demigods in the Vaikuntha planets. Here our activities are controlled by different demigods. Even if we move our hand and leg, the action is controlled by who, Avantika? If we move our hands and legs, who controls the activity? The demigods. But in the Vaikuntha atmosphere, there is no influence of the demigods or of time. Therefore, there is no question of destruction. But eventually, because Krishna is in charge of the demigods, we'll take your answer. When the element of time is present, there is the certainty of destruction. But when there is no time element, past, present, or future, then everything is eternal. Therefore, this verse uses the words na nunkshanti, indicating that the transcendental opulences will never be destroyed. The reason for freedom from destruction is also described. The devotees accept the Supreme Lord as the most dear personality and reciprocate with him in different relationships. They accept the Supreme Personality of Godhead as the dearmost friend, the dearmost relative, the dearmost son, the dearmost preceptor, the dearmost well-wisher, or the dearmost deity. The Lord is eternal, therefore any relationship in which we accept him is also eternal. It is clearly confirmed herein that the relationships cannot be destroyed, and therefore the opulences of those relationships are never destroyed. Every living entity has the propensity to love someone. We can see that if someone has no object of love, he generally directs his love to a pet animal like a cat or a dog. Thus, the eternal propensity for love in all living entities is always searching for a place to reside. I'm going to read that again, but could somebody close that door? Because I hear some kind of something's going on. The Kumbh Mela. This is one of the most important sentences in all the purports in Prabhupada's books. So I'm going to read it at least one more time. Are you ready?
Yes.
Please brace yourselves. From this verse we can learn, thus the eternal propensity for love in all living entities is always searching for a place to reside. And now I will read it again, as you knew I would. Thus the eternal propensity for love in all living entities is always searching for a place to reside. Eternally. So this gives a understanding of what devotional service is in a code form, really is we're transferring that propensity to love, which is there within all living entities, to Krishna. If you resign your work to Krishna, I love my work. Why? Because it gives me sense gratification. You don't love your work because you love your work. And you don't love your boss. I'll tell you right now, you don't love him. Probably didn't have to tell you that, but the fact is, if he or she calls you and says, I'm not going to pay you anymore, there's a 96% chance that you won't go in and keep working. Because some people are dedicated to voluntary work and they don't care one way or another. They do love their work. But the fact is that there's a propensity that every living entity has to love. And the work that we do in the material world is based on love of the senses. Because I'm taking care of this body, I'm taking care of the byproducts of the body and so forth, therefore I'm attached to what I do. But if you resign your work to Krishna, it changes everything. The equation is completely different. Now you're understanding this fact, and that is that we're part and parcel of Krishna. And we have an eternal, loving relationship with Krishna, which is now in potential form, because somehow or other we've been separated from him. And to reconnect, we need to begin to turn our attention towards Krishna. And mostly where the money is where our attention goes, especially in the beginning. So if we start to resign our work to Krishna, it means giving the fruit of our work to Krishna. And then we start to really feel like we're working for Krishna. Therefore, for those who are in the grihastha ashram, it's very important to resign resources. One can say, you know, I love Krishna and so forth, but Krishna sees not just what we say, but also what we hold back, giving to him. It's not a theoretical process. I was walking one time with my godbrother around Vrindavan, he wanted to go way off the path to visit a tree. And I kind of like to keep going when I'm on parikram. And I said, I'll just go visit the tree by meditation. He said, that's fine as long as when during prasadam time you also take prasadam by meditation also. So thus the eternal propensity for love in all living entities is always searching for a place to reside. It's searching for a place to reside. And it can it resides in many different places, but ultimately those are not satisfied. Recently, I heard Prabhupada speaking in a lecture that like means soon there will be dislike. Anything you like in this world, very soon you will also dislike. You can take it for granted. Because that's the nature of our attachment to things in this world. And when we repose our loving propensity in anything that's not Krishna, eventually it won't stay. It won't stick in that place. We'll have to transfer it somewhere else because things move on. So those who are intelligent, they make the wise choice to invest their loving propensity in Krishna. That happens by the process of devotional service, hearing about Krishna, chanting about Krishna, praying to Krishna, working for Krishna, and living in Krishna's place where he's from. And these things reawaken our attachment for Krishna. Even before we're attached to Krishna, we can begin the practices that will make us attached to Krishna. And that's what our process of devotional service is. All the things that we do, worshipping the deity, chanting Krishna's names, eating Krishna prasadam and so forth, are activities that will make us attached to Krishna, even though I'm still reposing my love in objects of this material world. From this verse we can learn that we can love the Supreme Personality of God as our dearmost object, as a friend, as a son, as a preceptor, or as a well-wisher, and there will be no cheating and no end to such love. We shall eternally enjoy the relationship with the Supreme Lord in different aspects. A special feature of this verse is the acceptance of the Supreme Lord as the Supreme Preceptor. Bhagavad Gita was spoken directly by the Supreme Lord, and Arjuna accepted Krishna as Guru, or spiritual master. Similarly, we should accept only Krishna as the Supreme Spiritual Master. Krishna, of course, means Krishna and his confidential devotees. Krishna is not alone. When we speak of Krishna, Krishna means Krishna in his name, in his form, in his qualities, in his abode, and in his associates. Krishna is never alone, for the devotees of Krishna are not impersonalists. For example, a king is always associated with his secretary, his commander, his servant, and so much paraphernalia. As soon as we accept Krishna and his associates as our preceptors, no ill effects can destroy our knowledge. In the material world, the knowledge which we acquire may change because of the influence of time, but nevertheless, the conclusions received from Bhagavad Gita directly from the speeches of the Supreme Lord Krishna can never change. There is no use interpreting Bhagavad Gita. It is eternal. Krishna, the Supreme Lord, should be accepted as one's best friend. He will never cheat. He will always give his friendly advice and friendly protection to the devotee. If Krishna is accepted as a son, he will never die. Here we have a very loving son or child, but the father and mother, or those who are affectionate toward him, always hope, may my son not die. But Krishna actually never will die. Therefore, those who accept Krishna or the Supreme Lord as their son will never die, will never be bereft of their son. In many instances, devotees have accepted the deity as a son. In Bengal, there are many such instances. Even after the death of the devotee, the deity performed the Shraddha ceremony for the father. The relationship is never destroyed. People are accustomed to worship different forms of demigods, but in Bhagavad Gita, such a mentality is condemned. Therefore, one should be intelligent enough to worship only the Supreme Personality of Godhead in his different forms as Lakshmi Narayan, Sitaram, and Radha Krishna. Thus, one will never be cheated. By worshipping the demigods, one may elevate himself to the higher planets. But during the dissolution of the material world, the deity and the abode of the deity will be destroyed. But one who worships the Supreme Personality of Godhead is promoted to the Vaikuntha planets, where there is no influence of time, destruction, or annihilation. Thank you. And make sure it's not going on outside. The conclusion is that the time influence cannot act upon devotees who've accepted the Supreme Personality of Godhead as everything. That's another notable sentence. If I may repeat, the conclusion is that the time influence cannot act upon devotees who have accepted the Supreme Personality of Godhead as everything. So I've entered this verse and purport into evidence here in this court. And now let's hear responses from the jury. Yes. And we have some texts also coming up. Thank you, everyone online, for texting in. Keep those texts coming. The operators are standing by to take your calls.
Prabhu, one very touching thing that struck me was where it said that the deity performs the Shraddha ceremony.
I heard you gasp when that came up. This is a very personal thing, right? Yeah. The deity performs the Shraddha ceremony. Very personal. Yeah.
I had a question. Right at the beginning, there was this point that endeavor in this devotional service or the opulence of the Vaikuntha planet, even in this world, is never lost. What does that mean? Opulence of the Vaikuntha planet in this world, that I could not understand.
Well, the overall idea is that devotees who are engaged in devotional service, who gain fame as a devotee, who gain a certain stature in devotional service, never lose that position. Example is given is Dhruva Maharaj. He went to seek out God for his own personal reasons, materially motivated reasons. But when he saw him, he said, I've been searching after something material, and now I realized that was like broken bits of glass, insignificant. Now I've found the greatest gem. And he lamented the fact. In any case, Krishna, he fulfilled his desire anyway. He gave him a planet in the material world, which is actually a Vaikuntha planet, the pole star. And he also awarded him full power of his senses for 60,000 years and ruling over the kingdom and so forth. And his stature as a famous devotee and his ability to perform devotional service and all of that, including his residence in the material world, is never affected by time. So whatever Krishna awards cannot be taken back. One should not try to see Krishna because, I mean, seeing Krishna is actually something anybody can do, really. But being seen by Krishna, that's the aspiration of the Vaishnav, to be seen by Krishna. It means to perform some service which is significant enough or which is pleasing to Krishna, which means it's significant, that Krishna will want to see you, that he'll notice you. Imagine you get the glance of Krishna, he'll look at you and say, thank you for the service. That kind of glance. That's eternal. Once one's been acknowledged for some service, for instance, practically in the Sankirtan movement, that's never lost. One who performs service to assist the Sankirtan movement here in this world and is recognized for that service, that is never lost. That's an eternal asset. Krishna will never forget it, and it becomes... Look at Jayananda, for instance. And it's not just Jayananda, it's anybody who's engaged, but he's a prime example. He came to Krishna consciousness. I think one of the reasons his story is so compelling. Hare Krishna. One of the reasons his story is so compelling is because he was such he was so quintessentially American. He was like a big, strong, you know, like good-looking American kid, and driving a taxi cab in San Francisco. He stopped by the temple, came in, can I do some service? Started doing service in the temple. People noticed that he's very sincere, and gradually he became recognized for his selfless service, which included things like building Rathayatra carts, fixing cars, doing the needful, sweeping the floor, doing whatever he had to do in a submissive way. Nothing that is something that, I mean, the things that he did weren't necessarily something that a lot of other people couldn't do, but it's the mood that he did them in and the fact that he did them at the right time. And he offered it to the Sankirtan movement. He offered it to Prabhupada and to the devotees. And Prabhupada recognized him. And he left the world. He got cancer like anybody else might here in the material world. But now he's different. His service was recognized. Prabhupada recognized him. He wrote, he gave his paycheck to Prabhupada so he could print the Nectar of Devotion. Prabhupada writes in the Nectar of Devotion, I think. Is it Nectar of Devotion? Or Krishna book? Nectar of Devotion. He thanks Jayananda Das Brahmachari for giving him money so he could print his book and so forth. So this is one example, but he's recognized that service will never be lost. That's an eternal opulence. Furthermore, as far as retaining one's opulence, you can look in the Bhagavad Gita. In the sixth chapter of the Gita, Krishna tells Arjuna who was a little bit worried, what if I take to the process and then I fall away? What happens to me then? Because I'm giving up a perfectly good job. If I'm giving up my job to come and take the devotional service, and then I lose it, I lose my standing in devotional service, isn't that a total waste? Because I didn't make it in either world. And so starting on 6:37, Arjuna says in the Bhagavad Gita, 6:37, Arjuna said, O Krishna, what is the destination of the unsuccessful transcendentalist who in the beginning takes to the process of self-realization with faith, but who later desists due to worldly-mindedness and thus does not attain perfection in mysticism? O mighty arm Krishna, does not such a man who is bewildered from the path of transcendence fall away from both spiritual and material success and perish like a riven cloud with no position in any sphere? This is my doubt, O Krishna, and I ask you to dispel it completely. But for you, no one is to be found who can destroy this doubt. The Supreme Personality of God had said, Sanaprita, a transcendentalist engaged in auspicious activities does not meet with destruction either in this world or in the spiritual world. One who does good, my friend, is never overcome by evil. The unsuccessful yogi, after many, many years of enjoyment on the planets of the pious living entities, is born into a family of righteous people or into a family of rich aristocracy. Or if unsuccessful after long practice of yoga, he takes his birth in a family of transcendentalists who are surely great in wisdom. Certainly such a birth is rare in this world. On taking such a birth, he revives the divine consciousness of his previous life, and he again tries to make further progress in order to achieve complete success, O son of Kuru. By virtue of the divine consciousness of his previous life, he automatically becomes attracted to the yogic principles, even without seeking them. Such an inquisitive transcendentalist stands always above the ritualistic principles of the scripture. And when the yogi engages himself with sincere endeavor in making further progress, being washed of all contaminations, then ultimately achieving perfection after many, many births of practice, he attains the supreme goal. Isn't that encouraging? I started compiling in my notebook a little list of all the very encouraging things that are there in Scripture. I'd make a little booklet, devotional encouragements. This is very encouraging how whatever you do in devotional service, whatever endeavor you make, is never lost. That's a permanent asset. We have a couple more reflections. And a question that came on a text that came in.
Hare
So we have Sudeep Prabhu who's thanking you for the wonderful class.
Oh, Sudeep, Hare Krishna.
And we have Gandharvika Mataji. And she's saying that, I remember the point in which you mentioned, if we are sincere, we will be guided in correct direction, even if we get apparently contradictory orders. In reality, a devotee undergoes so much mental disturbance until clear direction is gotten from within. Is this normal? Or is it because of lack of clarity in purpose?
Is it normal to be feel confused in the interim? Yeah, because that's the natural course of working something out. There's a little confusion in between until one becomes fixed on the answer. For instance, Arjuna, when he had captured Ashwatthama, he had committed a heinous crime by killing the sleeping sons of the Pandavas. And he brought the heads of the sons to Duryodhana and said, here. And Duryodhana realized what he had done, and even he cursed him. It was such a low act. And then Arjuna vowed to kill him. Draupadi said, good idea. Arjuna said, I won't rest until you are able to bathe standing on his severed head and so forth, Kshatriya words. And then they went after him, Ashwatthama, and he finally captured him and brought him back. And then Draupadi said, don't kill him, changed her mind, and said that I don't want her mother to suffer the way I've suffered from the loss of my son's compassionate heart. Besides, even though he's unqualified, he's the son of a Brahmin, so he shouldn't be killed. Meanwhile, Bhima, who's a fiery warrior, he said, kill him right now. And this dispute was so heated that Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says that Krishna, who was standing there in the midst of them, had to manifest another two hands to hold everybody back. Can you imagine a Kshatriya family arguing over this point, how heated it might become, and Krishna's holding everybody back. And there's Arjuna, who's the great hero, and he has to decide what to do. And there, at that time, he's momentarily confused, but then has to use his intelligence, manishaya, intelligently then, and Krishna looks at him as if, now, do the right thing. So, he cut off the jewel, which was tied to the knot of hair on the back of the head of Ashwatthama, which is the sign of Brahman, which showed publicly that actually he had become degraded because of his actions. And that killed him socially. But it didn't kill his body. Because there's no injunction in the Shastra for killing the body of a Brahman. But killing him socially was appropriate, and this was a balanced action. So in the interim, yes, there's some confusion, and one has to find one's way forward by triangulating. It means you have to look from Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra, look to Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra, and take advice until you can see manishaya by using your intelligence. What is the proper thing to do? So sincerity mixed with intelligence, mixed with the help of proper authorities, guru, sadhu, shastra, means you have selected a person or a group of a small group of people who are giving you very specific advice about how to advance in devotional service because you trust them and they're in the same mood, like-minded. And shastra is there for everybody to go through, and it's important to go through it regularly. Don't just go to it when you have a problem, but if you constantly read Shastra, your intelligence will be clarified anyway, and that kind of manishaya, or the intelligence, will be forthcoming in all kinds of difficult situations. Those who are constantly hearing and chanting understand that they're preparing themselves for these kinds of situations. Unintelligent people think, well, if I have a compromising situation, a difficult situation, if it comes up. Intelligent people knows they come up all the time, unsought. Therefore, they're in preparation. Louis Pasteur said, great discoveries come only unto the prepared mind. So devotee is always in a state of preparation for the next calamity, for the next big decision that's to be made. And if one continually hears and chants, for instance, if you read Bhagavad Gita every day, and you read Srimad Bhagavatam every day, when these circumstances arise, the gap that Gandharvika Mataji is asking about of confusion, should I do this or that, it will be significantly closed. It may be practically indistinguishable, because when one's intelligence is fortified with Krishna's instructions and one's engaged in buddhi yoga, which means that one's spiritual integrity is so great, that means, and it's developed because one considers that when one's alone, one is most in the spotlight. When one is alone, one is most in the spotlight. That is, there's a relationship with Supersoul that I have a responsibility to continue hearing and chanting and connecting with him even when no one else is watching. And that means I have no motive except to be engaged sincerely in his service. To such a person, the intelligence is instantaneous. It's instantaneous. Otherwise, if one's not so much prepared, the gap may be a lot bigger. And one may go through a lot of consternation. But that's not to say there aren't examples in history of great devotees who didn't go through some period of consternation in trying to figure out what to do. That gap may be there also, because it's purifying for the devotee to see that there's a trying circumstance and then to do everything necessary to figure out what to do, and in the process one comes closer to Krishna. Is there another one?
Gandharvika Mataji saying thank you for a very practical solution.
You're welcome. Akurinath Prabhu.
A question.
Not yet, though. It's a potential state. It needs to turn green.
Okay, now I got it. A question people have asked me, and I was curious how I should answer, is in these verses, these encouraging verses from the sixth chapter about how the unsuccessful yogi gets a chance to, life after life, to completely perfect himself. People ask, we're interested in yoga, we're coming to the temple, we're chanting Hare Krishna. Does that mean that we have, or should we think that we have been previously engaged in yoga, or that the other people that are coming to the temple were previously engaged in yoga in previous lives?
Yes. Yeah, that's stated in the Nectar Devotion and elaborated in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. Now, those who have an attraction for devotional service have had some previous contact. Just like that. That's easy enough, right?
Thanks. Thank you.
Anything else? Okay.
Hare Krishna Prabhuji. I just wanted to share my experiences before I started attending these classes regularly. So I was into ISKCON, but I was not totally into ISKCON, in the sense that I used to chant and stuff like that. But every now and then, right, my mind says, why are you doing all this? I don't see the end result, right? Because I keep doing chanting, I keep doing service, right? So I used to always have that negative thoughts, I don't know whether I'll go back to Godhead or not. I don't know whether I'll reach Krishna or not, right? And then I start attending these classes, reading these lectures, right? So like, for example, in this 6:45, it's clearly mentioned that, if you engage with sincere devotion, you will, and after many births of practice, you'll reach the supreme goal, right? So that, there are like classic examples like Dhruva Maharaj you mentioned, right? So many stalwarts who made it back. So that gives like a positive direction, And then some other verses like Neho Vikramanasti, it tells whatever you do, it won't go waste. And then, but Krishna also says that, right? Like Manushyanam Sahasre, it's not easy to reach me. So that always keeps us on the toes and make sure that we keep working hard until we get to the end of the life. So those are the realizations I had.
So if I understand you correctly, in the beginning you had some doubts even as you were practicing, but as you continued to hear, the verses
made sense.
Made sense to you, and they convinced you that
you have to.
The process was solid, and that it also required that you continue.
Yes.
Even despite the fact that there are obstacles.
Yes.
Thank you very much. I like the before and after testimonials. They're very helpful.
Sometimes it seems like I've already gone back to Godhead, in the sense that the activities that I'm doing right now in devotional service are the ones that I'm going to be serving Krishna with. And compared to the life I had before Krishna consciousness, compared to my life now, it feels like I've already gone back to Godhead in that sense.
Nice. And that's, you know, it's true. What we practice here is the same kind of practice we do in the spiritual world. Hearing and chanting about Krishna goes on constantly. And worshiping in various ways. That's why devotional service is so practical and sweet, that you can do it here. And it's mentioned also that as you continue to water the seed of devotional service, it's planted in the heart, it's cultivated. The heart is cultivated. And when one sincerely takes the orders of the spiritual master and accepts initiation and then properly adheres to the instructions and the process, that is the seed. That entire process of cultivation is the seed of devotional service. And as you continue to water it, the seed sprouts, and Lord Chaitanya gives this metaphor that it grows through the coverings of the universe. And then it breaks through the viraja, which is the demarcation between the material and spiritual world. Through the Brahmajyoti, which is the spiritual sky, past all the Vaikuntha planets, and all the way to Goloka Vrindavan, and then there it entwines itself around Krishna's lotus feet. At that time, although one's here working at Oracle or preparing law cases or doing whatever one does in this world, Google, at a cubicle even. It's possible to be at a cubicle and at the same time be connected to Goloka Vrindavan. The watering process, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, so goes on even at that point. It's not that you stop. It continues. And there's no other way to really approach Krishna in the spiritual world except through this process of devotional service and the creeper growing in that way. Thank you. I'm glad you feel like that. Any other reflections? Yeah, we have a couple more minutes. And if anybody who's online would like to text in, or anybody who's on our conference call system would like to speak up, we'd love to hear from you.
Please. Hare Krishna Prabhuji. A question. We were reading a verse before this, and there was a statement that said during the dissolution of the world, the deity and the abode of the deity also get dissolved, or something on those lines. So the deity there refers to of the demigod?
You'd have to show me the section. And what was it? Can you recall?
I think it was 3.25.3. Yeah, okay. So yeah, it is there. That page was correct.
Okay, so which section are you asking about?
Yeah.
Thus one will never be cheated. By worshipping the demigods, one may elevate himself to the higher planets, but during the dissolution of the material world, the deity, small d, and the abode of the deity, small d, will be destroyed. So speaking about deities with a small d means the demigods. So it's comparing devotional service to Krishna, to the deity, capital D, to the demigods, which is consistent with what Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, where he mentions that he is the source of all the the deities, small d, in the material world, who are the demigods who supply air and light and fulfill one's material desires and so forth, and that they're temporary, and their benedictions are also temporary as well. And to the degree that they can grant anything, it's actually something that's coming from Krishna. So an intelligent person doesn't take shelter of the demigods. And also noted in the Srimad Bhagavatam that Shiva Vrinchi Nutam Sharanyam. Shiva Vrinchi Nuta Sharanyam means even Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva take shelter of Krishna. And specifically, Karabhajana Muni says, of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's lotus feet. Therefore, who would take shelter of demigods if they're taking shelter somewhere else? It's indicated also in the verse from the Brahma Sanghita, yet pada padlava yugam vinidaya kumbha dvandve pranama samayesa ganadi raja. Vignan vinhantum alamasya jagatrayasya govindamari purusham tamaham bhajami. Many people take shelter of Ganesh. Why? Because he removes obstacles. Nobody wants obstacles to their sense gratification in this world. So then the verse says, well, where does Ganesh get his power from? He gets his power because he's keeping Krishna's lotus feet on his head. That's how he gets his power. So intelligent person then says, Govinda Madi Purusham Tamaham Bhajami. I just worship Govinda. Why take shelter of Ganesh? Not necessary. Of course, it says in the Nectar Devotion, it's a part of the, one should take up the worship of Ganesh in order to enhance one's deity worship. So there was one devotee who was a prolific fundraiser, who was worshiping Ganesh, and he was giving Prabhupada a lot of the money that he used to build Mayapur and Vrindavan, and he was also a charismatic figure in ISKCON. So some other devotees wanted to worship Ganesh also. Although Prabhupada had never really introduced it, except for that one little sentence in the Nectar Devotion that is part of the text of the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu that he was summarizing. And they said, Prabhupada, can we too worship Ganesh? Either that or they started doing it and somebody complained. So Prabhupada wrote back to settle the matter, and he said, yes, it would be fine as long as you also send $100,000 a month. In other words, if you're going to imitate somebody, do it all the way, not just partially. Yes.
Well, thank you for that wonderful discourse. I'm going to seek your attention here and see if you can indulge in a little bit of intellectual exercise. When you were describing the ascent of an individual all the way to Vaikuntha, I couldn't help but remember a recent movie I saw, Interstellar, in which he goes through many planets and then the very galaxies, only to return and realize that the most powerful thing is love, and an unconditional true love that he finds in his family. And for a grasped person who's trying to engage increasingly in devotion and love towards Krishna, bringing that love back into their family and looking at their family members with that love, could you elaborate that a little more?
Well, most movies end that way, unless they're really tragic movies, and usually it doesn't happen in Hollywood because the people don't like that. It's like they'll show a focus group, and we don't like that ending. You know, it's like make it soften it up a little bit, we'll run this one. So most novels that aren't by most popular novels are about love in the material world between man and woman, and then that leads to family life and so forth. But in the Srimad Bhagavatam is mentioned Pumsastriya Maituni Bhavamitam Tayor Mitur Hridaya Granthamahu, that actually this kind of love, the attraction between male and female that results in family life, thank you Vraja for being on cue, results in the entanglement of family life, is the prime cause of entanglement in the material world. Now, I started my class at about 8 o'clock this morning, and the primary theme of today's class was that one must live in family life. It's the natural default a mode of this material world, to live in family life, to live in families. This is our nature. But at the same time, cultivate Krishna consciousness, and that one need not be an obstruction, that is, family life need not be obstructive to one's ultimate advancement in spiritual life. But the Shastra does warn over and over again, prolifically, that attachment between male and female is illusory because we're not actually males and females. It's only the body. It's only the bodily structure. And therefore, even the very hardcore transcendentalists who are talking about Atma Tattva Gyan are warning us to deconstruct what is actually in the body. I mean, they graphically go into the consideration of what are the bodily elements, and is that what you really love? And, you know, they'll point out that the attractive bodily features of the male or the female, if you actually look at them individually, they're not so attractive. If you go to some place and someone gives you a bowl of soup and you get hair in it, you'll want your money back and you'll never go back to that place. Whereas, you know, in commercials, it's like long, luxurious hair, and there's so many poems and songs in history about, like, her hair is just so, you know. Or his hair is like, did you see his hair? It's divine, but you don't want it in your soup. Because it's actually abominable. So there's this dichotomy in the material world. And the Shastra points this out over and over again. So if you were to come to the Shastra, the scripture personified, and say, you know, what do you think of the conclusion of this movie that you know, the guy goes to the top of the universe and comes back down and then says family life is the ultimate, Shastra would laugh you out of the room and say, no, this is not the ultimate. However, there is a way in which one can live and should live within society and have a deeper abiding love for those who are... I was just staying with a family in Denver, Colorado, at the home of Atushta Krishna and Vrinda Sundari, who have two children who are very Krishna conscious. His young son, every time he hears kirtan abai, he begins dancing in ecstasy, and he won't let you leave the room. He'll keep pushing the madanga back at you. You put the madanga down, and no, push it back. You know, he's only 18 months old. And the daughter as well, you know, she wants she and her friends, I'm not good at ages, but I would say she's maybe 3 or 4 years old, something like that. Her friends, all they do, because the parents, Atushta and Vrinda Sundari, the bedtime stories are all Srimad Bhagavatam and things like that. So what are they doing, her and her friends? They're doing plays about Krishna's pastimes. Krishna stealing butter from the gopis, extracting taxes. They're in the other room playing, what are the plays they enact? It's like, okay, you're carrying the butter this time. Now Krishna's coming up and he wants the tax, you know, for the butter and so forth. And meanwhile, although it's family life, it's not obstructive. Actually, everyone's making advancement, and it's such a joy to stay in their house. Even though the kids cry, because kids do that, they kind of live in the moment, and any emotion that comes to them, they just express it like wholeheartedly in any second. But because it's all centered around Krishna, the whole household is like the whole vibration there. There's no discord. There's no unhappiness at all. Whereas normally, because kids are shown just unlimited variety of the material world, the kind of angst that comes out of them when they cry is actually discordant, because they're being afflicted by material desires and so forth. So family life, which is centered around advancing in Krishna consciousness, becomes a cause for advancement, and everyone in the family advances together. And even those who aren't that interested get drawn by the tide. There are families in which, you know, there's maybe one really strong practitioner, and he or she is intelligent enough to know how to cooperate with the rest of the family, at the same time go on with his or her practice. And then the rest of them get drawn along by the tide of that one person's devotional service. What to speak of, everybody in the family is actually interested. So I would rewrite the ending to the that movie and have the person come down, and on the way back down, they stop and get a book at the airport, Bhagavad Gita, and they read that, and then they go home, and they have family life, but it's all centered around Krishna, because they have some revelation that they went to the top of the universe and that there was something more than that, and then they read what that more was in the Bhagavad Gita, and they have a conception, then it becomes perfect. Thank you.
Thank you. That is indeed the perfect ending.
Pardon me?
That would be the indeed perfect ending.
Okay. Thank you very much for your beautiful question. So now we've taken some time today to talk about how the devotee is never lost. So you take this to heart. The devotee is never lost. Krishna will never forsake you. Even if you do 1 second of devotional service, even in one instant, you say, "Oh my Lord, I surrender unto you." Forever, he considers that he's your protector. What to speak of those who dedicate their whole lives, despite all the many obstacles that come from the mind and the body, and to all of the many other living entities in the material world, they go on performing devotional service. We also talked about how there are no obstructions to the process of pure devotional service, even family life, which is the most entangling of all the attractions in the material world. If one goes on with the process of devotional service, then the entire process becomes purified, and everyone in the family goes back to Godhead and makes advancement. Anything else as a subject, as a major title? Yes.
We also talked about the prayer that Priyavrata could have potentially put in front of Narad, which is Om Agyan Timrandasya. You explained it.
And we went over the prayer that we say regularly, and one of the reasons I did that is because if you want to revitalize your spiritual life on a regular basis, look and see what you're doing. Don't just take it for granted. Don't say it by rote. And if your mind's going in another direction and you're doing what you're doing, stop and come back to the matter at hand and really look at it. One sentence can change your life. Take every sentence one at a time. Of course, that may not be possible if you're going through the whole Bhagavatam on a regular basis, but the fact is that every aspect of devotional service is important. And if you gloss it too much, if you don't look at it, if you don't give it due attention, then you can take it to be something ordinary and make an offense, and then you'll be interested in some other kind of variety in the material world. And one of the best ways to become enlivened is to learn what you're saying when you say prayers. We say, Om Agyana Dimirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya. What is Anjana? Correct. So now we have this image when we're saying it, and we're remembering out of gratitude, because we take time every day to go into at least one aspect of your daily ritual. And ritual is a good thing. It's not necessarily bad. It means you're acknowledging a higher authority. That's why we do ritual, that someone's given us a higher way of doing things in our life, and we're following that rather than whatever the mind wants to do when it gets up in the morning. What would you like to do? Like, how about peanut butter? But it's only like, it's only 8 a.m. It's like, okay, peanut butter and beer, and you know, the mind will come up with unlimited things to do, but ritual means I'm following a higher authority and I'm going to perform this out of respect. But you should know what you're doing, what the ritual is. You can do it with full respect. Any other topics?
This statement that you made emphasize, and thus the eternal propensity for love in all living entities is always searching for a place to reside.
Right, and that could be a whole seminar in and of itself, just that we have this loving propensity and it's searching for a place to reside. Just like when you set up your computer in a foreign place, immediately it starts searching for a server. Is it a server it's looking for? It's looking for a network connection, and it starts going up and down, and it's going like, and it makes this list of all these server connections that you can possibly connect to, right? So we're like that. Our loving propensity is like that. It's always out there, like looking for a place to log on. And unless you direct it, you know, you get on your computer and say, not that network, you're going to get hacked. You go to this network and you say, this is the network I want to log on to. And then that's bhakti. That's the sadhana bhakti. You say, I'm logging on to this network, and then you repose your love in that direction, then you'll become happy. So we covered a few topics in the morning. It's never enough time, and that's a joyful thing because we're never satiated by the process of hearing and chanting. So although we live in various places all over Silicon Valley, take the process home and make sure that you're getting enough so that your intelligence is clarified, so you feel some satisfaction every day from your practice, because that will sustain you even amidst the assault of your senses and all the other influences of the material world. You'll be satisfied in and of yourself, even if you get one molecule of happiness from chanting your japa each day. 16 rounds is a suggested minimum of chanting, because you need a little momentum to get up to that level of satisfaction from chanting. Sometimes it takes up to 15 and a half rounds before you actually feel some satisfaction. But don't go away without getting something, and then you'll be protected, and you'll be able to live like the lotus flower that's in the water but not touched by it. Thank you very much. Go premanande hari hari bo. Nacharyar marman, nacharyar marman, nacharyar marman, nacharyar marman. Hey, nacharyar marman, nacharyar marman, nacharyar marman, nacharyar marman.